Zahn! Welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy books, their lore, and all of the things we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, your newly married Jarl of the West Coast, and joining me on this manticore hunt, why did he have to be the one that survived? It's Chris Lauer.
Hey guys. Glad to be here. I'm a little nervous. I feel like I'm about to get in the cage with a rock for the first time.
You know, I guess we didn't talk about that. Is it rock or rook or roker? We really didn't talk about how we were going to pronounce that one.
I think it's a rock.
I was saying rook in my head because...
Maybe it's rook. I did the audiobook and I should probably tell you guys, but I can't remember how they did it. I think it's like rook. I think it's like rook.
Rook.
I think it's like
because audiobook. They call them rookers.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's definitely not rockers. Rook.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool though.
Rook. Yeah.
All right, well, anyways, and he's only crying because he lost all of his white stones. It's Zach Mysick.
I just emerged out of a dark cave after force bonding with this book, so I'm ready to take flight.
Wow, you guys had similar intros today. We're synced up here after this long break. For our 10 listeners out there, apologize for the break for the last couple months we've had.
You know, I think there are 10. The people are talking in the streets. They say, "Oh, I listen to every episode. Oh, you know, I'm really going to look at this with a critical eye." You know, I think we're growing.
You know, I had to do an introduction at a work thing recently, which I work for like a books kind of adjacent seller. And I had to do an introduction. They're like, "What's your relationship to books?" And I was like, "Oh, you know, I love reading sci-fi and fantasy. I do a podcast with some friends." And they're like, "Oh, you want to tell this room of 100 people what the podcast name is?" And I was like, "If you're really interested, just talk to me on the side. I don't really want to like advertise this at work."
Oh, that's awesome.
Not that we're like that inappropriate, but I also don't want to like, I don't know. I work with some weird people, so I don't want to send any red flags up. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've been on a break for a couple months. Just I was getting married, and then Chris and Zach were both in the wedding, and there's just a lot going on with work for everyone. So
I forgot how to read for a while.
Yeah.
Chris, truly.
Did you ever figure that one out? You back in the game yet?
I'm ready for Brandon's third secret project. I think I can knock that out. I think I'm back in business. We'll see.
All right, I got a few that I've come across my table recently that I want to have on the podcast here. So,
nice.
Let me know when you're ready to go, and we'll knock them out. Might have another long break after this podcast. We had to give Chris a 100-page book so we could get something out.
It still took me a while.
Yeah, it still took weeks.
I mean, this is like a 3-part book, you know. It's just not nothing, you know.
It's actually 4 parts, I believe. So,
I mean, yeah. Well, I was trying to give it some grace.
There's a little excuse on this one. Today, we are covering the 2023 novella, Untethered Sky by Fonda Lee, one of the favorite authors of the podcast. She's the author of the Greenbone Saga, which is one of our kind of favorite fantasy books from the last few years. So we're really excited for reading this book. I was supposed to go to the release party that she was holding in Seattle, and I kind of forgot about it, so I didn't end up going. But yeah, I was very, very excited to read this book. And I think she did a great job with her first kind of novella that she put out. So
yeah,
I will. We'll start with a little summary here, and then we'll get into our thoughts on the book. So Esther had wanted to become a rooker, a hunter that works with large birds called rooks, after a manticore had brutally killed her brother and mother. She started training with a new rook named Zara and to create a lifelong bond as hunters. As the bond grew, Esther started growing closer to another rooker named Darius. Darius and his rook, Minu, take Esther on her first manticore hunt, the main purpose for these specialized hunters. Once Zara... which was Esther's rook, is ready for her first hunt. Nasmin, another of the rookers, Darius and Esther take her out, and Zara gets her first kill. The prince Kovash followed the hunt and honored them for the kill. Nasmin and the prince hit it off and run a publicity tour throughout the land to build support for the rookers. In the meantime, Zara gets her second kill, and Esther is finally a fully fledged rooker. Darius and Esther are starting to build their own relationship, and it's getting fiery. After support is gathered, the king plans a great hunt to coordinate soldiers and Rookers together to eradicate all of the manticores. Zara goes after a rogue manticore, but fails. So Minu steps up, kills the manticore, but is attacked by Nasmin's Rook, as the birds are very territorial. Darius tried to step in and save the Rook, but is attacked by the manticore. His Rook dies, and he is badly injured, and he loses the will to live with the loss of his Rook. Esther tries to nurse Darius back to health, but things are not looking good, so she returns home to the what's called a mew, where they keep the Rooks. On the way, Esther hears a manticore, goes to hunt it, but in the process gets trapped under her chariot. Zara flies off to mate with a male Rook in the sky. Darius shows up to save Esther, and they go back to the mew together to get new Rooks.
Nice, nice. Great summary. Great summary. You know, it really brings it all back. For such a short book, you know, I do think a lot happens. That's something I appreciate about it, is how quickly things went. You know, it wasn't just about Zara's first hunt, right, which you might think was such a short book. No, she goes on the first hunt, and then she goes on. And I think the book spans, like, what, 12 years of it? So it's a while, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chris, you started it off. So what is your overall, like, thoughts or ratings of the book out of 10? Like, what did you think overall?
Overall, it was a good novella. I had a good time reading it. It took me out of my slump, so to speak. I was able to read it. I was engaged. I wanted to keep coming back to it. I liked a lot of the lore. I thought she built a really lived-in world. I think you could go back to this world really easily and do all sorts of things with not just the characters, but with the Rooks, the Rookers, whoever this prince is. You know, he's like the eighth son of some wealthy king, and who knows? I think there's a lot more meat on this bone, so to speak. I think I talked myself, I was going to give it a 7.5, but I'm going to go to 8. I'm going to go with 8.
Nah, that's pretty high. I think this is our first novella we've done on here too, so it's interesting to hear.
Well, I mean, Time War.
Oh, true. I guess that's basically a novella. I think that counts as a novel, but nah, it's very short. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Ooh, I think this is like, I guess besides some of like the brand and stuff, this is like my first fantasy novella. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect, like pacing wise, stakes, that kind of stuff. My gut reaction, my Goodreads reaction was like three stars out of 5. But kind of going back and re-listening to some of it today and kind of sitting with it and kind of understanding what kind of story I think she wanted to tell, I'd raise it. I'll give it, I think, 4 stars out of 5. Like, if I had to redo my Goodreads, I like that.
Is that a 7, an 8, or a 9 to you out of 10?
Ooh, that's like a set, kind of like in between a 7.5 and 8. I think not quite an 8, but above kind of a 7.5, I think, for me. I think that's like, I like how the stakes weren't world ending, like how they're very like personable. I think I had some pacing issues where it was almost, the pacing was almost as like an actual novel pacing in some parts versus a novella. And I think that's kind of where my issues were, if I had to like nitpick. But overall, I think it was like a great book. It was written super well. Love the characters, love the stakes, love the relationships between not only the humans, but between the animals and the human animal relationships and like the villains. So I really do like it. I think it's one of those books where the more I revisit it, the more I will like it. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Question for you, Zach. When you said the story she wanted to tell, what did you mean by that? What story did she want to tell that you got on the second read?
Well, I think originally, when I first like opened up the book, I thought there might be like, oh, like a great battle or like armies against each other and like save like an entire like countryside from monsters, something like that. So that's kind of like what I was expecting. But then when it kind of ended the way it did, I felt like she really just kind of wanted to tell a story of like, this is like a young woman, like her like childhood trauma, her trying to make bonds with this like creature, her overcoming not to like jump ahead, but like one of my favorite parts is like how the villain, you didn't know if that villain was actually from her childhood or not. Like it just had that mismatched eyes. But that didn't really matter much to us readers because like we knew what she was thinking. It didn't matter if that was the actual animal or not from her childhood. But just like since we've been there with her from the beginning, we kind of understood like what that animal like symbolized. And like that was like the great foe, not like a earth-shattering army or anything like that. So I think that's kind of what I mean, where now that I kind of know that story is supposed to be like an interpersonal story that she's trying to tell and not like a huge save the country from a random monster type of a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you made some really, really interesting points in there. I think this is probably one of the first books you've read that the stakes are just, you know, helping the town, and that's basically what they're doing, is just trying to like stop these manticores from getting into town. It's not, like you said, saving the world or trying to beat the big bad. And also the other point you made of like it almost felt like an internal battle. They were fighting these external manticores, but it seemed like it was, you know, an internal fight, and the manticore is just like the manifestation of that internal battle. So those are really those are good points, I think. And I agree with most what you said, Zach. I really like a command versus wild type story, which this essentially was. And also I'm a sucker for an animal companion. So I was immediately pretty sucked into this book. Just read it in one sitting. I think I probably rate it a little bit lower than you guys. I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10. And the only reason I'd give it that is because I just wanted more. This is the first time I think this has been said on this podcast, but I wanted this book to be longer.
No, that's can't say that.
That's my hot take. That's my hot take.
What about our brand?
I know. Our tagline's ruined now. Make it shorter. It's not
going to
work.
Yeah, Zach, do you think we could have shorn up a little bit of the middle here? Do you think it was a little too long?
I mean, kind of. I mean, not to step on what like Brandon's saying, but I think that's kind of too why. Like, I want to rate this book like 9. Maybe I will by the end of this. But it's like I said, I don't really know how to gauge like short story, novella, fantasy stuff. Because like, yeah, I agree. Like, I want a whole trilogy or a novel set in this. So it's kind of like, well, that's not what she's trying to do. Like, she's not trying to write like a novel, back to my other points. Like, that's not the point of this. So it's like trying to, how do I grade her on her intent of like, well, I know you want more, but that's not the point of this. The point is to be like the small 150 page story. That's, you can't grade me on a novel when I told you it's going to be a novella. So I wrestle with that too, where it's like, yeah, I want more of that.
I think that's a fair point. Like, her intention has to be taken into consideration and everything. But the only reason I'd rate it lower because of that is I feel like things like the Darius Esther relationship maybe could have been cut out a little bit, and they could have replaced that with some like world building or some additional background of kind of like the kingdom that we're in. Just because I just want to know that stuff. And that's just a personal preference thing. I don't think it's anything against her writing, because it was written very, very well.
Does Fonda Lee have the championship belt for world building after this book? I mean, if you just look at Greenbone Saga's world building and then this book, it's not even a book, it's a novella. But we're already like, I mean, the world is great. You know, like that seems like our consensus opinion of the world is fantastic. We want to be in it, you know, and she just gave us a little bite.
Well, I think she makes these worlds that are so close to our own, but like there's one thing that's different. So like Greenbone Saga, it's basically like modern day Japan, or like, you know, 1900 Japan. But then they also have this kind of magical ability too. And this is just like medieval England, but they have these huge birds that they use for things. So I really, really like that, like, that reality that you can kind of live in and put yourself in the main character's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point. I agree. She has that belt. I think she also has like the restraint belt, because like you
whoa. We don't want to get into Fonda Lee's sexual life here.
Like, honestly, I don't even know what that means. The restraint. I mean, like, I'm trying to say, like, the Greenbone Saga could have been like 5x. You read that last book and you're just like, oh, this could have been, she could have made this a 5-book series, but she's like, no, I want to do a trilogy. I'm giving you a trilogy. I don't care if that means it has to be like a 2-year time skip in between chapters, but like, I'm giving you a trilogy. And same with this, where it's like, yeah, there's enough in here to like make a novel, but like, I'm going to restrain myself and like just make a novella, like I set out to do. So that's what I mean by that. But it's like, I like that because so many authors are like, it's supposed to be a three-part series, but it's actually going to be like five. And maybe a couple of the books might be shitty, but I have to expand it.
Who are you adding?
Like, I guess like George. Like George, that's supposed to be a three-part book. And then now it's supposed to be, what, seven? I mean, freaking yeah. Wheel of Time. Wasn't that supposed to be like three books and it turned to like 13?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
I'll tell you what, that could have been three books. I'm only, whatever, six books in. That could have been three books for sure.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. So I like how she will like stick to her plan. And then if she wants to explore these worlds more, I'm all for it. But
you yeah. know, when I saw her in at Barnes & Noble when she was talking, what was that even? Oh, she was talking about the Greenbone books. But she talked about exactly that basically, is like she wanted to keep writing Greenbone books, but she knew that the story was told already. So she wrote this book as like a palate cleanser from those. And so I think that is like a signal of good restraint. Like there's very few times when you extend a series and then the series benefits from that. It's usually the opposite where you just add in a bunch of shit that no one cares about, or it brings it down a little bit. So I think that's yeah. a very important skill to have, even though she is still kind of expanding on the Greenbone saga a little bit, but with some novellas yeah, some and stuff.
Stories and stuff.
Yeah.
But good for her. I mean, if it's getting commercial success, then she should put all of her time and energy into that, because anything she does is going to be great. And if it's going to be on television, I feel like Greenbone's just going to be adapted like someday. I mean, I can't imagine it won't be. I think it's so adaptable and the characters are so interesting.
They're in talks right now, apparently. So
okay. with a new place, because she had that deal with Peacock, but then it fell through. So hopefully someone else picks it up.
I mean, this is rife for like an HBO show or something. Like, I would love to see HBO pick that up. HBO show
would be the dream. It'd be the dream. Oh, man. That'd be so good.
HBO is kind of taking a different route with, I think, a lot of their... They already have House of the Dragons. I don't know how much more fantasy they're going to bring onto their palette, but...
It's too bad.
We can hope. We can wish. Any other like overall thoughts or anything before we talk some specific plot points here?
Yeah, I guess I would just say I think you said that this is a book you think that every time you come back to it, you like it more and more. And that I agree. I think this would be a great book that, you know, at various points in your life, you can come look at and maybe get a different perspective on, like, cause to read this as, you know, maybe a young adult, and then to read it as somebody who's maybe like raised kids or even just like adopted a puppy or something, you know, and like went through that and then like lost the dog, you know, like just like going through that, like reading it before you go through that experience, reading it after you go through that experience is probably like way different emotionally. And it made me think of, to like copy Bill Simmons, like we could start a rereadables podcast with, and this would be the first one, like just like revisiting this like a couple times over, you know, a year or so, and be like, yeah, that's a great one.
Chris, you took 3 weeks to read this 150-page book, and you're wanting to start a second podcast about books.
Let's do it. who's burnout?
Yeah, exactly. but you know, I think that's it. Almost every book that we've covered it on this podcast so far, every time I've returned to it or thought about it again or like read a summary of it again, you just pick up something new from it. I think this is one that, on the base level, seems very basic because it is a basic story, but there's just so much emotion that you can get from it. And like you said, depending on where you are in your life, I think you'll pick up something different from each time. So maybe we'll do just that. We got to revisit Greenbone at some point. So
yeah, we do.
That'll be maybe the start of the rereadables.
Yeah.
Let's hit some plot points then. So early on talks about the killing of the mother and brother by the Manticore in their village that they grew up in. And the dad was basically like, this is bullshit. They should have killed you and not my son, because he was a very traditional guy. This scene was fucking brutal. It was a really like tough way to kind of like start off the book. Or I guess it was like the second chapter or something, but it was, yeah, it was a lot. My question on this is, what do you guys, when you were like reading Manticore, what were you envisioning in your head?
Oh, you know what? I did a lot of Googling here because I had heard of Manticores and I kind of like knew of Manticores. And the second I saw the word Manticore in this book, I was like, oh, I should know what that is. I don't remember. And I looked it up like before it was even described, you know. And I do think that the way that Fonda describes it is slightly different than every photo that I found. But, you know, so I was picturing a cat-like, monkey-faced demon, you know, something like that.
A cat-like, monkey-faced demon? Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah.
That should be our band name.
That's that guys, a good band name.
Should we start a band? Are we doing it? We got two podcasts and a band. And
what else? We got all sorts of time.
Yeah, I didn't look up any pictures until just now. All I knew of a manticore was from RuneScape, and so that was basically just like a lion with wings. And so that was what I knew a manticore was, but in the book I was imagining like, you know, like the Pokemon Sandshrew. I was kind of imagining like that, like kind of like an armadillo type thing with like spikes on its back and stuff. I don't know why I was envisioning that because she did not describe it like that one bit, but that's just kind of what I had in my head.
Yeah.
Zach, what were you thinking?
Ooh. I kind of just pitched like a giant oily panther. It's kind of like what I kind of imagined.
Oily panther. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, like sleek looking. Yeah. Like rubber skin, like panther. That's kind of like what I like imagined for that.
So we all had very different thoughts in our head, even though she described it pretty succinctly in there.
But, yeah, did a good job describing it. I still have like a hard time sometime like imagining what the author describes things as.
Yeah,
just same. Kind of go with whatever my brain just interprets those words as.
Oh yeah, that I read a word. Image pops in my head that I'll never leave again. So that's my thoughts on that going forward.
But we have another addition to the pantheon of dad sucks as well. So,
Oh my God, just the worst quote of all time. I wish it was you. Can you imagine saying that's like daughter?
Terrible.
Good terrible. Lord. Sorry. Yeah. I said that's you in the intro, Chris. I didn't mean it.
I already wish it was
Zach.
Yeah.
So then we get that little background and then we kind of understand, her, why she wanted to become a Rooker and where she saw Rookers the first time. And then we see her training Zara. So she's coming to this, what's called a Mew. They put her into a dark cage with Zara. And that's basically you live and feed and do everything within that dark cage for, I can't remember exactly how long. I think it was like a week, maybe.
I think it's 6 days.
6 days. All right.
Yeah.
This was horrifying. This would be so fucking scary.
Oh, I love this part. This might be like my favorite part of the book, where she was just describing the slow process of, you know, like we are each other and like they're just like that crazy bonding, and just like training a new animal. I thought that was just really, really well written.
Yeah.
Yeah. It freaked me out, but it made me kind of like jealous at the same time. I want the opportunity to do something like that, but obviously rooks don't exist. But it just looks like I have my dog Luke. We're basically bonded like that. So
yeah, there you go.
I hang out in his cage with him.
Yeah.
but yeah, I thought it was a really interesting idea. A lot of like, you know, training dragons or training, you know, lions or horses or whatever you see in fantasy, it's all basically the same thing. You feed it and that's how you grow the bond. This was a little bit different. The feeding's definitely important, but you actually like live and become part of its environment and the only thing it has to rely on as like a source of comfort, which is interesting to see to the bonding, like the rook started to trust her. But then she also started to like also train herself to trust it too. It was just interesting to see like the psyop, I guess, that she like pull, or these rookers like pull on themselves in those cages was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like what they called it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Zach.
Oh, no. I was saying like these first two scenes were like my favorite parts of the book. Just like
same.
Just like the juxtaposition of you have like this very emotional story going on with this like clinical part of like you have to do X and then you do Y and then you do Z And it's kind of like comparing those two things of like knowing why she has to be so, not like emotionless, because there's a lot of emotion in her training it, but it was such like a formula of you have to do this, this, this. So like watching that kind of step-by-step process unfold while getting those like emotional elements of like why she even wants to do this, I thought it was really kind of a cool way to splice up. Because I feel like other authors, when they kind of do like a, I guess I wouldn't even say it's like an info dump, but it kind of is, where it's like, you have to do this, 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 this. It can get kind of boring, but for some reason, yeah, just like her explaining it while you're also getting these very emotional back pieces of why she even wants to like risk her life being in this dark room with this creature. Like what drew her to that? So I saw that worked like super well.
Yeah. 100% agree.
I like that they called I like what they called it. They called it the dark days. And I think it was her friend Nazmeen who was like, I think there was a line really early on in the book where she said, I'll bring you game during the dark days. And that's what she said. You know, she didn't say, you know, like, I'll, me and my rook will hunt for you while you're training your rook in dark days. You know, when you spend 6 days, you know, like she wasn't an exposition dump. She just said it and it intrigued me. I didn't understand it, but you keep reading and you understand it. And I really liked, you know, I like the name, but I think the dark days is fun and it's clever and it's real. And I like how she threw it in there too.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. You said it's real. I feel like a lot of this, if rooks existed, this is how we would use them. A lot of this is how would it actually like happen in the real world. And so it is a fantastical story, but it really doesn't seem like that fantastical. Like we were talking about earlier, yeah, it's based in realism. And so everything that she describes things as, name things as, is just like all very realistic. And I love that.
It really seems like this used to be the reality back in the Middle Ages. All the rooks killed all the manticores and then they fucked off or they died out or humans thought they were too dangerous and killed them. You know, that's why they're not here anymore and manticores are gone and we have just moved on with our lives, you know?
Could be. We'll start we'll start investigating a little bit more.
Yeah.
Find some rooker bones. Okay, so they do the initial hunt, which is, you know, exciting. I don't know if there's a whole lot to talk about within that Zara's first hunt.
I would mention the relationship between Zara and Nazmeen and Esther and Nazmeen and Esther and Darius. I appreciated the restraint, like Zach said, and both of those relationships. You know, the story's not about the relationship between these humans. It's more about the relationship between Esther and Zara. So while those relationships were fleshed out as much as they needed to, they weren't the point. This isn't a novel. It's a novella. So we kind of like move past that. But I do think it, you know, it's prudent to mention that there was, you know, real brief character development there. And I did appreciate like how it did feel a bit like a betrayal for Nazmeen to, you know, run away with the prince. And I did understand that. And her relationship with Darius, how it's kind of closed off and how he's, you know, he makes sense, given her past, that she would be drawn to him.
Yeah. I think those relationships, I was going to ask this in our question segment here, but I can just bring it up now, but I think the relationships, like you said, were succinct. They're very quick how they described them, but it was good to show her developing a relationship and how that works, because she lost most of her family and she hated her dad. So she had a tough time building relationships. So her building relationships with Darius was really foundational for the rest of her life. And then the jealousy that she had towards Nazmeen for this small thing of like getting to go on the publicity tour and stuff, like she didn't want to be jealous, but she was jealous. It's just like a very real emotion of like, I'm not jealous of this, but like inside you're like, ah, fuck, that could have been me. And like, you know, and then in the end, it ended up like being bad for Nazmeen because her rook wasn't as trained as the others. And it led to kind of disaster in the end. So none of that was kind of explicitly, I guess the jealousy was a little bit explicitly said, but a lot of that was implicit in just the way that Esther talked about things. And I thought that was just really well done for the relationship building. But my question was going to be the Darius and Esther relationship, kind of the love between them built from the love of this creature, which, you know, a lot of times happens, is like a hobby brings you together. Did you guys buy that relationship? Were you rooting for them? Were you like hoping that in the end they became a relationship, or how were you kind of feeling towards that or about that during the book?
I was rooting for them. I was kind of nervous. I mean, you read kind of enough like shitty fantasy, shitty romance books where it's like, oh, are they going to hate each other and be like these like faux enemies and then turn into lovers? And that's like the trope. So I really do like how they'd never really hated each other. Like it seemed very like respectable of like, there are certain boundaries that you just don't cross as like Rookers and everything like that. And it just seemed they never hated each other, that respect. And then towards the end, I was like, I'm totally fine. This is like a friendship respect thing. But then when it kind of switched, like, you know, he should have kissed me, like I would have let you, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, like I don't hate this as much as I thought I would, you know? So I'm
definitely,
I'm kind of for it. It's not all in your face. It was very kind of slow. Wasn't like super filled with like cliches. And I was kind of fine with whatever direction she kind of wanted to take those two characters in.
I co-sign.
That's a plus one from Chris. Yeah, it's I'm in general, I don't like love stories in any book because I think, like you said, they're full of cliches, but this one just very subtle. It seemed realistic and I thought I was gonna hate it, but in the end I was like, okay, I get this. And it was the same thing with her and Nazmin's relationship too. It was I thought they were gonna become like rivals and like, you know, going against each other and like all this what happens to girls in high school, basically. I thought it was going to be that, but it wasn't. And they, in the end, ended as friends, which was good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Nazmin goes on this publicity tour with the prince, and not a whole lot more, I guess, to talk about in that, but they go on a tour around, and Esther's jealous. But then the king, I thought it was interesting that through that, these Rookers became like celebrities throughout the kingdom, and the king hears about them. Everyone's kind of rooting for them. I can't remember what Nazmin's Rook's name was, but she basically becomes like a celebrity.
Azar.
Yeah. I just thought that was all really interesting. It was like kind of like medieval England. They had knights that were kind of the celebrities of the country. And so it was interesting to see that from a different perspective, because honestly, the Rookers all kind of just seem like giant nerds. And so it was interesting to see like these like weird, like scientist people become like the celebrities of the kingdom. I don't know. I liked it. I don't know if there's much more to say about that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Cool. So when the king finds out, the celebrity picks up, they start this great hunt, which was armies of soldiers going to find Manticores, assisted by the Rookers. My question here is like, the Manticores, I understand, are strong, but if they have these entire armies, like, why do they need the Rooks to do this? Like, I wasn't really like sold on that. Did you guys have thoughts on that?
Well, I guess the in-world reason was because, you know, like the more people, the more the Manticores go after them. But you're saying like you just get enough soldiers and they can handle them, right? So I guess maybe we're supposed to think there isn't enough soldiers. You know, they're hard to find. They're kind of hard to hunt. They're, you know, they'll run away from you if there's too many people around. And I guess if the more people that are there, the more people that it kills, and it'll just keep going until it runs out of people to kill.
Yeah. I don't know. Cause the Manticore is essentially just like a lion, you know, like that's basically like really all it is. And so I don't know.
It's got that scorpion tail too.
Yeah. It's got the scorpion tail, and it also didn't it have like really tough skin too. So it was like, it couldn't be penetrated by like normal weapons or something like that. So I guess.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be like more intelligent too, like than your average bear, I would say.
All right. Well, that those scenes were cool though. Like the planning of everything that was going into this great hunt was all really
interesting. Did it annoy you guys when they didn't listen to the Rookers, who are like, this is terrible, this is a terrible idea for Rookers, like you can't just fly us around in groups of people like this. That's not how rooking works, because that was annoying me and I knew it was going to be a disaster. Of course, I'm sure, as we all did.
Yeah. Yeah. They are fucking idiots.
But I guess, you know, another real part of the story.
Yeah. I didn't hate it, to be honest with you. Because my question is like, so before this great hunt, do they just like wait until one of these like attacks a village? Or are these guys like always on patrol trying to like, are the Rookers doing their own hunts daily?
I think
or
so. Are they just like, okay. I think so.
So that's kind of my thing. Are. Where when they announce the great hunt, I'm like, wait, shouldn't you guys be like constantly hunting these things? Like, why are you just waiting now to like be on the offensive? So kind of like the defensive and waiting for like sightings. So I didn't mind because they ended up killing like 26 of these beasts, right?
Yeah, that's a good amount.
So I'm like, I think that's
good. That's pretty good.
If these are supposed to be like, super dangerous, like even one in the area is enough to like scare people like to move away, then killing 26 of them during like a like promotional tour is like, I'm like, it's kind of worth a couple soldiers and maybe one of the birds. And that bird died because of like,
just got a general's mind over here.
Well, the bird died because the bird died. Yeah, not to be all like pro king, but the bird died because the other bird wasn't trained enough. And it wasn't because like the soldiers fucked up. It's because the other bird dropped the ball. And that's why that bird died.
Well, besides Zach, we're a pro rook podcast here, so we don't support the killing of
just
any
playing
rooks.
Both sides.
I don't know. I felt okay. I guess for your first point, they also hunt just regular animal like deer and stuff like that to provide food for the city, and so like that's like their main thing is like, getting food, and if they see a manticore, then they attack it. So yeah, that I guess that clears that up. But I also just like kind of started feeling bad for like the manticores a little bit too. I don't know if you guys felt that, but I was kind of like, this kind of fucking sucks for them. They're just trying to eat. They have families.
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to survive.
I guess that's why they needed the slaughter scene in the beginning to really let you know, like, just never forget. These things kill until they can't kill no more. But yeah, I hear you.
I get it, but I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of like lion hunting in Africa, where they're just like, yeah, we should just like fucking kill these things. I don't know. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
And then the population decreased.
When they start describing the eyes of anything, it's hard not to empathize with it. When they're like, this manticore has mismatched human looking eyes. It's like, oh, well, shit.
I mean, my ex-girlfriend had mismatched eyes too. So all I could think about the entire story was her eyes. I was like, fuck, this is weird. Don't kill her.
Personal for you too, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then after the great hunt, the death of the bird, was the ending at all a surprise to you? I was a little bit surprised that Esther left Darius and decided to go back to the Mew. She gets trapped in the chariot. Did you guys what at that point, what was like kind of your emotions, or what were you thinking the ending was going to be, and were you satisfied with it?
I mean, I guess I wasn't quite sure what I thought was, how it was going to end. I think I thought that those two would like leave together with like her bird, with her rook, but I guess like in hindsight now, after like reading the book, I think I'm happy with the way it ended, because they both could have just given up, because they've really explained like once your rook leaves you, there's like no point of like living, because it's like a hard journey to like retrain it. So I do think with that kind of foreshadowing, I did like the ending, how they both chose each other and they knew it'd be super hard to do it alone or even with someone, but they both chose like do it with each other to go back and start from scratch. So I did like it, but I couldn't tell where it was going, that like final few pages.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was surprised. I wasn't like shocked or anything. I don't think it's like I wouldn't consider it a twist ending, but I was surprised. I didn't know what to expect. I thought, you know, a regular vanilla story would probably end with her just killing that manticore and saying, I battled my demons and off into the sunset. But I liked how Fonda kind of threw us for a loop there. I thought it was a great ending. And I was heartbroken when the rook left. You know, I felt like I could really feel what the narrator, or maybe not a narrator, but what the main character was feeling in that moment. And it was really sad. I was sad for them. And then to have it end with her having the strength to say, I want to start again. I think it's a good message and I liked it.
Yeah, it was definitely my favorite scene was when Zara left. Cause it's just like the solace that, and the understanding that Esther had felt, like that was her actual conquering the manicores, was like coming to terms with loss, I guess. And so she really like understood.
Letting go.
Yeah. Letting go, which she never did with her mother and brother. And so like killing the manticore would have avenged them, but it wouldn't have like brought her the solace that she had when Zara left. And so I thought that was, a very sad ending. But also kind of reminded me of, did you guys watch Air Bud back in the day?
I can't remember a single thing about it except for the basketball dog.
So there's a part where the old owner of Air Bud comes back, and so they make Air Bud decide between the two people. They put him in the middle, and they each like whatever side it goes to, that's who gets the dog. And that's what it kind of reminded me of, is like she was like, if you want to come back, Zara, I love you, but if you want to have that guy and go mate and like live your life, like I am okay with that too. And it's just really, it was a good ending. It was nice.
Yeah, it was very respectful. It was like of the Rock. It was like, you're not just an animal here. Like, I've been holding you your entire life, and it really is time for you to be set free. And you know, it really makes it seem like rocks are more than just another animal. There's something else. There's something mythical about them.
Yeah, they definitely have more personality, that I feel like, than just like a normal bird. Like she, like Zara was making like an intentional decision when she was leaving, rather than just being like a wild animal. So
yeah.
All right, well, moving on, I don't really have any quotes from this book that were specifically stood out. The only one would be, I wish it was you, and that sucked.
We already talked about the one, but I did like, I'll just restate the one about the dark days or whatever. Just one piece of her clever world building.
Cool. We already kind of hit on all of the lore from the book, the Rooks, the Manticores, the Rookers. So I don't really think we have anything more to say there. Highlights and lowlights. So I already kind of gave my highlight was Zara leaving and kind of that coming to terms with that. Did you guys have any other highlights, or what was your favorite part of the story?
I mean, I think like the beginning, like that, the scene where we're like attacks like her village, and she's watching her brother, and you learn about like her parents, like fertility issues, just to like have another kid, and that brother dies, and she has like hide in the well. I think that was probably like my favorite, that part. And like I said, like the two different eyes in that monster kind of at the end of the book, those are like my two favorite parts.
Yeah, my favorite part was just the whole training sequence for the Rook was my favorite part. My least favorite, but I can't really think of anything.
I didn't really have any low lights for this one. I thought it was pretty on the up and up the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. I think some like the PR stuff, I think that's kind of the section where I was like, oh, you know, if this is like a novella, maybe you could kind of trim some of this stuff up like a little bit. I don't know, but I was happy with it all. But if I had to, like, you know, gun to my head, like pick something, I think it might be that part.
So Brandon, your low light was, it wasn't long enough. You want more?
I mean, yeah, I want more of, I just want more of the, I could have gone for another 50 pages at the beginning to like set the story up, to learn more about what Rookers are, what their place in the kingdom of Dartha or whatever it is. I just would have liked more of that. I don't necessarily need more in the middle or the end. I just wanted a little bit at the beginning to kind of set things up a little bit more.
Yeah.
All right. Some questions from the book. I'll start with a very obvious question. We're hunting manticores. You can make any animal larger than it currently is to be your hunter partner. Kind of the Spy Kids question of like, you could create any animal larger than what it is. What are you choosing?
Oh my gosh.
Who? Well, you guys answer after I run to the bathroom real quick.
Oh, all no. Right. Do you have anything in mind, Brandon? This is such a good question. I feel like I really need to. Oh, man. The first thing that popped in my head was spiders, right?
Ooh.
As far as hunting ability. And well, hopefully we're giving the fact here that they're my friend and that they won't turn on me. I'll have to come to terms with how scared I am of a giant spider. But at the end of the day, I think they could be a good hunter. But I feel like there's got to be better, like, tiny hunters out there. You know what I mean? Like a wasp.
Ooh, a wasp is a good one. I was kind of... I haven't really thought too much about this, but I was kind of thinking like a snake. If you made like a snake a little bit bigger, you could kind of have it pull your chariot, and that has that long strike capability and something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
What's a good small hunter? A fox?
A fox. A big fox. But now aren't you just talking about a lion, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess it depends on how big we're gonna get.
Maybe a mongoose.
The lions are cool. Ooh, a mongoose. What's those Tasmanian devils? I don't know if they're actually crazy in person, but that could be a fun one.
I've heard from some friends that have hunted Tasmanian devils that they are the most, like, they're small, but they're the most vicious animal out there. So, like,
wow.
I think that would be a very good choice.
Yeah, you get that thing up, fight fire with fire.
That or like a wolverine, maybe something like that. But then once again, you make that bigger, it's basically just a bear. So, like,
yeah. Well, that's like an insect. Zach, you got anything?
I mean, I think like eagle's a pretty good one, just so you could like fly around. Like panther would be kind of cool, or maybe, like a. Some of that maybe like digs underground.
Oh.
Like chipmunks dig underground? Like what like digs underground?
So you're like giant groundhogs.
Like a prairie dog. Like a giant.
Yeah, like a prairie dog. Something where it's like I could make tunnels underground and have like an underground tunnel system.
Oh, you're looking for a vole then is what you're looking for.
Fuck whatever voles. Comes.
Yeah, yeah, tell me about it.
We got voles in our yard right now. Those motherfuckers suck.
Yeah, they do. They're good at digging holes. And they're good at digging tunnels. So
very good at digging holes. All right, my final answer: praying mantis. Final answer.
It's a great one.
Yeah,
they're vicious. Vicious.
Fucking love those things. Yeah. Quick side note. I know we're running a little long here, but quick side note: when we were coming back from the wedding, we drove back to Seattle from Nebraska. And we stopped at the Badlands, and there's a place there that you can just go feed prairie dogs. Like, there's just a whole field of prairie dogs, and you buy a bucket of peanuts, and then you just go feed them. And it was so fucking fun. There's just baby prairie dogs running everywhere. It was a blast. Also,
yeah, that sounds cool.
It felt wrong, because every other sign I've ever seen in my life is like, don't feed the animals. But this one's like, come feed the animals. It's weird. Anyways, as a side note.
Peta note?
I don't think anyone's told him yet. It was like a fucking shack in the middle of South Dakota. So
I'll tweet at him. I'll let him know.
All right. Other questions for you guys. Do you guys have any questions here?
Yeah. I guess kind of speaking of PETA, are the good guys in the wrong here when it comes to the Rooks? Like some like the whole training stuff, like taking them while they're young, keeping them in a dark, lightless room for weeks on end with no food unless like they six come days. To you to do it 6 days. That seems like torture. Like if PETA found out that we're just like keeping animals and like birds in like complete darkness for 6 days, like that's like that's like, you know, especially like we have armies. Can't the armies like keep these guys in check?
Yeah, and like what else?
I don't know.
Like, obviously, they're trying to domesticate the birds, but like, what else goes on in their head? You know, being trapped for 6 days is probably a lot of panic and like other stuff that goes on in the ruck's head. Yeah. So,
especially when it's like kind of drilled in that they really do want to like fly away and like
they just want to
find
be free.
A partner and mates and fly. And where it's like, no, you kind of have to like emotionally beat the shit out of them so they resist every animalistic urge they have towards you.
I think you're right, Zach. I would compare rooks maybe to elephants a little bit, intelligence-wise. And I think that's what this question boils down to. It's like, how much intelligence is there? How much consciousness? How much agency are we talking? Because obviously, if you're doing any of this to humans, it'd be nowhere near okay. So they're somewhere in between an eagle and a human, obviously, right? Or a hawk and a human. I like to think of them close to like elephants. So I think at the end of the day, maybe it probably is kind of a bad thing, an old school thing, something that you might have been able to get away with back in the day. But if this was going on in 2023, there would be a whole new school way to train rocks that they would say is just as good, but maybe it's a little bit harder, you know, like that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point. They're probably in the early stages of the rook development. So maybe, you know, they'll learn a better way. But I have read Water for Elephants, so I'm strongly against the whatever they call captivation of. No.
Captivity?
Captivity. Whatever. I'm strongly against the caging of animals.
Yeah, you know. Elephants are so smart.
They're so smart. And they have, yeah, like real emotions that are comparable to humans.
You guys seen the videos of the elephant taking off the hat of a human and like putting it on its head and like smiling and being like, haha, jokey joke, and then taking it back off its head and putting it back on the human?
Oh, yeah. It's classic. It's awesome. That's,
like, anyway, scary. Free the elephants.
Yeah. Yeah. I just went to the roots. I went to the zoo when we were in Lincoln, and I forgot how sad zoos make me. It's just like you just go and see animals just like pissed that they're where they are. It sucks.
Uncle High.
Yeah. I was. So it was the day it was like the day after the wedding, so I was very high because I was very hungover. Yeah. All right. Any other questions you guys had about the book? Any other thoughts, last minute wrap-ups?
Yeah, I guess another question, last one I have for you guys. Okay. I think we all kind of want like a sequel, or maybe you don't, but if you had to have another story set in this world, I guess, what would you want? Would you want a full-fledged novel with these same characters? Would you want like different set of characters, novel, keep on doing short stories in this world? Do a prequel. I guess, how would you want the next installment of this world to like?
I got it.
No, I got it. But you go first.
This is what it is. Like, maybe like a fourth of your book is going to be from the perspective of one of these manticores. Maybe it turns out that the manticore that died in the end wasn't the one that terrorized our main character, right?
Oh, shit.
So we go back to the prime manticore here. And it could, like, this would be hard, I think, to write, because you don't want to write him as a full-fledged intelligent human, but you want to have like enough intelligent consciousness there that you could, you know, write some meat, you know, like have something be there. But then the rest of your book is just going to be about somebody who ends up coming in contact with this manticore, not necessarily a rooker. It could be like a prince, or it could be a commoner or a merchant or whatever. But I like the dichotomy between the two.
Interesting. So it's like Wicked to the Wizard of Oz. You get the perspective of the bad guys and like sympathize towards the bad guys. Interesting. Yeah. They'd have to be, they'd have to be smart enough to be like have perspective, which would be tough. Like,
I'm thinking of like a pretty smart being who just gets this crazy bloodlust, right, when they get hungry and just like completely lose sight of everything. And that's why they go on these kills or whatever. But most of the time, they're just trying to live their life.
I like that. I'd read that.
Yeah. I think that'd be really like a short story. I think Fonda would be really good at like, I guess I'd love to see Fonda play around with that level of like consciousness, intelligence when it comes to POV. I think she'd do a really good, because she can like convey so much stuff with so little words. It'd be really cool to see her kind of writing from that like quote unquote limited view.
This is something that George R. Martin is good at. He does little bits of this sometimes in the Song of Ice and Fire
with like the dire wolves. Yeah, I like that. Good idea.
I like that one. Mine's very different. My idea, I guess, is a little bit more basic, but would be a Rooker and the Roke are on a great hunt. Doesn't have to be Esther or whatever, but they're on one of these hunts. They get separated from the group and they're lost and they have no idea where they're at. Their chariot breaks down and it's a survivalist story between the Rook and the Rooker trying to like survive the elements while being hunted by a manticore.
Yeah. And it would completely throw like the entire strategy off. They'd have to learn how to survive in a completely different way.
Yeah. I think it could be very interesting. I don't know if it'd be possible, 'cause like you said, it's
the rooks aren't set up or trained to do that. But
I mean, I can see it. You know, early on in the book, you would have the rock have a chance to get away, right? Disaster strikes, the rock can just F off and leave. But maybe, you know, maybe it has a soft spot for its old trainer.
Comes back.
Yeah.
Or a sequel to this book, we just have Zara come back when Esther's like, you know, 20 years down the road. Zara comes back and like finishes her days together or something with them.
Or kills her current rook.
Or kills her. Different book, different story. Zach, did you have anything in mind?
Yeah, I really have nothing else to add. Besides, I like your guys' idea. I would just do like a sequel, maybe like 10 years later to see. I like to see like Esther and what's his name?
Darius.
I'd see them maybe like ushering like a new age approach to it, you know?
Mm. Oh,
sure. raising them.
Create, you know, a new way to raise them.
Yeah. To be like, you know what? We survived being bonded for 6+ years with these, but you have to like let them go and like start their own families. And then like that next, like maybe have like a more of a actual partnership with the rooks of like, if you train them, set them free, like maybe they'll bring their young to us and it'll be more of like a communal situationship. So like a forced, like Stanford experiment type of stuff.
This is good. This is what's so good about this story is that there really is so much more stuff you could do in this world.
Yeah.
That Fonda could do.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind if this is like her palate cleanser of like in between stories, she just like knocks out just like a random story in this universe. It doesn't have to be related to any of these characters, just like her like playground to just like cleanse her palate.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right, Fonda, you listening? We got some great ideas here. Write them down.
All right. We're the last three people she'll ever listen to. Three dudes in the Midwest. I'm sure she's...
Oh, I am really good at writing. Yeah, we got...
Also, Brandon's not even in the Midwest. He's in the big city, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's I'm on the West Coast, so apologies. I know.
Yeah.
I know a lot now.
You know what the readers want.
Yeah.
All right. To wrap things up, MVP, LVP, I can knock things out here. LVP is Azar, the bird from whatever her name was, Nazmin.
Yeah.
MVP, Zara, because she escaped captivity.
Yeah, I like it. MVP, Zara, LVP. I'll just go with the Manticore, I guess.
Yeah, big LVP for that guy.
Big L.
Yeah. I agree with you guys. I guess just to change it up, I think MVP, I'd do like the king because I'm a king stan. And just because I feel like I think it worked. Like, even though that the bird died, they successfully covered it up. So, like, it didn't get out to the public that it was a failure. It's like, that's good. And they killed like 26 of these manticores, too. So, like, that's like a good talk about PR. And then he has like a son. Yeah. One of his sons getting married to like one of the heroes of the story, too. Like, I think he's winning, I would say. Yeah.
Well, you could also say the prince is the MVP then for convincing the king to do it, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, he won't get the credit though. It's like the people.
Yeah, true. All right, guys. Well, this was good. We'll do another podcast in 3 months when Chris can finish another book. thanks everyone for listening. As always, follow us, I guess, on stuff. We're not really doing much there. We'll try to push out episodes as much as we can. Thank you for listening. We love you guys, and as always, we are the Knights of the Hardcover. Huzzah.